All the buzz last week was on the third episode of The Last of Us on HBO, and we'll address it and a particular set of thoughts on Wakanda Forever now that it's on Disney Plus and streaming. It's those two things and some other random thoughts on Taking It Down this week.
Take projection.
Welcome to Taking It Down, where we cordially unpack TV and film for our busy Alabama people who are also obsessed with television and movies as much as we are. I'm Blaine Duncan, one of the hosts. Taking It Down exists because I thoroughly enjoy dissecting why I like what I like and why I dislike what I dislike when it comes to TV, movies, sometimes books and music. I have an English degree and I'm also a teacher, so I try my best to pair those together to offer insight worthy of your time, because we know you're probably too busy to read everything out there. Plus, I was once your classic 80s and 90s kid who grew up in front of a television set and was thrilled to visit the movie theater for entertainment. Luckily, my ideas aren't the only set of viewpoints on the podcast every week, as with me are always these three. Adam Morrow, who's an erudite, traveling, and studio musician with a penchant for fine literature. Donovan Reinwald, a media specialist with encyclopedic knowledge on film and a lot more. And then there's Natalie Morrow, the first person to ask about fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and any Beyoncé album. From us, you get the obvious, but you also get the obscure. Yeah, so here are our hosts who help us sort through what's good and bad. First up, he's been helping Ron DeSantis determine what books need to come and go, is Mr. Donovan Reinwald.
Hey, y'all.
Hello. Next up with us, she's had her BB gun pointed to the sky at that damn balloon all week. It's Natalie Morrow.
I didn't have time to do that. I've been sitting there waiting on my Beyonce ticket. So.
Is that true?
I mean, I've done all the things to hopefully get the lottery ticket number, to get the pre-sale ticket, whatever the hell. So we'll see.
Nashville?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I hope you get them.
Yeah, you want to come?
I'll go. I mean, if you're paying, I'll go if I can't afford them. But
yeah, me neither.
So it's all for the best if you just don't get them.
I mean, there's a small part that thinks you can't afford this. Don't even try.
Just put it on the card.
Yeah. Might as well go if you can.
You're right.
No Adam this week. He's working on some music that you can catch him playing on the road in some honky tonk soon, I bet. He's going to be a member of the Glory Fires for a month or two. So check those guys out. He is a traveling musician. It's in our intro and, well, proof's in the pudding. Go see him. I felt like everyone had an opinion or an exclamation of emotion with episode 3 of The Last of Us, which was titled Long, Long Time. Due to this podcast recording schedule, we cover things a week behind if they air on Sunday. It's not really our choice. It's just the way it lands. And most notably, it's HBO shows. We get behind 1 week going. So we're just going to dive right into spoilers as soon as we start talking about it. Pedro Pascal was on SNL. Did either of you catch that?
No.
I didn't either. I've got it. I think it's recorded, but I didn't stay up late enough.
I never watch SNL. Occasionally someone will like force a skit on me. That's about the extent of my, not that it's not funny or whatever. I don't even remember it.
Last week was Michael B. Jordan and it was pretty funny.
Was he promoting something that isn't Wakanda Forever?
Well, Creed 3.
Oh, okay. That's right. I forgot that was coming out.
Yep. Well, do either of you have a reaction to the rush of emotion and praise from viewers and people and critics sometimes from The Last of Us Episode 3?
Holy shit. My wife cried for an honest 20 minutes straight. Like, she started crying and didn't stop crying, and then we went to bed.
And she woke up crying.
I think she did.
Man, I had the opposite. The emotions were not flowing in the Morrow household because of this episode.
So that's what Adam alluded to in a text, but you can get a whole lot deeper being on mic with us. What did you think? You personally, and maybe even if Adam said anything.
I won't speak for Adam.
Okay.
Because I know better. For me, I mean, it was fine. It was just a love story.
Yeah.
And like, I understand that a lot of the emphasis is, or maybe it's not, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of like the representation part that's really important. And I think maybe that's what people are reacting to. But if you just pull it, if this were a man and a woman storyline, would we be as affected by it? So I'm not saying that I'm not saying that it's not important to have that kind of representation on television. That's not my point. What I'm saying is, in general, those kinds of just romantic storylines just don't do it for me. Like, it's just whatever.
I think that's fair. The story of what happens in this episode between Frank and Bill is merely implied in the game. If I'm not mistaken, Bill reluctantly calls Frank his lover in the game, and it's noted that they may not even like each other a lot, but they're just lovers out of
convenience. What?
Convenience might be necessity. The word. Necessity is the other word. Yeah, both of those seem to work. Now that's just I have not played the game. I'm going by what someone told me this week. I want to maybe center our conversation about something, because I think Natalie and I are in the same boat. My overall view was that it was pretty good, and I really liked some parts of it a lot. And then when I went online and saw all the just gushing praise, I thought, oh, they thought stronger of it than I, but I did not think negatively.
Yeah, I found it to be just a really solid hour of TV.
Which is weird, because it was an hour and 15 minutes. What 15 minutes did you not like?
The 15 minutes I'm not including are the Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey wraparound.
Okay. No, I kind of felt the same. I thought it was a little long. They're really having some liberties with runtime on these mm-hmm. episodes. I thought it was the 15 minutes, I think, is what made me. The only negative thing I thought was just, wow, this one's got some beef on it. It's a little saggy. But I liked it. I really did. I was captivated. Other than the runtime, I started to notice. But no, one of the discussions we can have, I think, is I'm going to get you guys' opinion on this Vulture piece written by Jackson McHenry. And he called the entire show empty. And he claims that it's the most apparent with this episode, which is just an imitation of Prestige TV.
Bold.
Yeah. Oh, it gets worse. I want to bring up some of his other claims and let you guys react.
I know what that means, but I wouldn't necessarily apply it to this show. That makes me think of, like, sorry, Freeform, I'm throwing you under, like, Freeform trying to start a prestige drama, right? And it's like, it doesn't really know what to do, so it just goes through the hoops. We're like Lifetime trying to do a prestige drama.
That's funny.
But I didn't find this one empty at all. I thought the actors were, all the actors have been pretty good, and I found Ron Swanson to be a believable romantic partner.
Yeah, Offerman, who plays the limited screen time, seems like, unless they bounce back to him in a flashback. He plays Bill. The guy from Vulture makes it clear that he doesn't like the growing old together idea. He thinks that that's a little rote and obvious, and the two actors, Offerman and Bartlett, hit the same beats throughout the episode. I thought that claim was really weird. He really, really wrote it, the piece, as if he's got something against this show. Because I've written similar pieces where I've had something against something. I mean, it sounds a lot like that kind of writing. One of his other complaints is, and we've seen it all, I said as much last week, is what more can it bring? When it does try something that's deeper and it's not in the game, it still gets criticism. So I don't know that he was completely fair. What do y'all think about some of what he... I'm guessing you didn't see the piece or read it. I'm sort of quoting his claims, maybe even out of context, but that's the idea.
Are you sure he's not talking about The Walking Dead?
He compares it to that.
I say it's the same thing. It's just a different title.
I would argue it's The Walking Dead, but better.
I was appreciative that it went away from Joel and Ellie. We can't have 9 hours of just them.
Well,
can't.
We'll find out.
I think we might.
We might have 8 hours, yeah. But we're not. I mean, my God, you can't. I don't think you could. I think the critique should have been that developing a video game with a linear narrative is the problem. That's your issue. That maybe that's not the way to make this kind of show. Maybe it could be loosely based on the game, but I just don't think it, you know, hitting all those scenes and beats up from the game to make people online, what I call it last week, orgasm online. What's the point of that?
Honestly, I kind of feel like my attitude for this show is like it's a nice, solidly constructed drama, right? Like, it's got the mm-hmm. Chernobyl guy on it. He did a good job. If it's not for you, like, it's just not for you. It's fine, because it's not necessarily groundbreaking and original, unless you're really, really interested in shot-by-shot remakes of video games. But it's just extra. Like, don't want... You know, we had this discussion a long time ago when we talked about El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie, of whether it needed to exist.
Right.
And I think, you know, I came down, if I remember correctly, I kind of came down on the side of like, no, it doesn't need to exist, but it's a nice, fun extra. And that's kind of how I feel about this show.
But is this fun?
Are
we having fun?
I'm having fun.
I'm kind of not anymore. Like, this last episode was fine because it was kind of a standalone and it took us out of, like, I wasn't nervous around every corner. But yeah. Otherwise, like, I'm not having fun. Like, it's just...
It's a slog.
It is. It's too much... It's too stressful. And I'm not, like, there's yet to be... And I think this is maybe comparing it to The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead at least had a much greater source, like, because I actually read more of The Walking Dead before I even saw it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So going into that was a lot more enjoyable until it just deviated completely and then it just got terrible.
Whereas,
as much as I love a video game that has a really good story, it's still a video game. What else is there to pull out other than you're following a guy who has a mission, because that's the game.
Well, what else is there? You get episodes like this who people will love or hate, I guess.
But it's just pander. It just feels, I don't know. I don't like it. I saw somebody commented about how this last episode was like watching an extended version of that first part of Up. That's just what it was for an hour and a half or hour and 15, which is fine. But it's just, it doesn't work for the show. Is it within the show? I don't know. But does it matter? Who cares?
It was a nice little... It was a nice little save point we got to, right? Like, we got to the save point.
Yeah, there you go.
We got to see some of the story behind it, and then next week we're off again. We've saved our game and we're renewed.
You've got all your supplies. You've got a vehicle now.
Yes.
So it's time to move. I get it. Yeah. Okay, now I'm back in.
It's funny that you say like it stresses you out, because I'm a pretty jumpy TV and movie viewer. I'm super traumatized by the bit in The Princess Bride when Fezzik throws a rock at the man in black and it, you know, almost hits his head and it makes a loud noise all of a sudden, and I got startled every time. But I don't know why, but I don't feel that kind of stress or startlement with The Last of Us, and maybe that's to its detriment.
I definitely feel it because it's not even that scary. Like, the monsters aren't that scary and the clickers aren't like really jumping out that much. And honestly, they look cool. Like, it's not like just gross like The Walking Dead was.
Yeah, I love the makeup.
But I think the music, the way it tries to build suspense, where it's like they could be walking around a corner and they're just walking around a normal, like nothing is there. But they play up the suspenseful music, and I just can't handle it. I'm just expecting things where there may not even be anything, and then I'm mad because there wasn't anything there for me to get worried about.
And it's the game started playing the fight music, and it faked you out.
Exactly.
Natalie asked if we're having fun. I don't know about fun. I'm entertained, I think. The writer from Vulture, McHenry, never addresses the fact that the characters are gay, by the way. Which I was very curious, like, not even in a good or bad way. I was really happy that there was such open representation. And I am a TV and movie viewer who's always surprised. Like, I never see anything coming, ever. And I don't want to, really. I'm not that kind of viewer who tries to guess everything. So when Frank sits down at the piano and you're starting to realize, oh, okay, maybe he's gay. Or, you know, careful viewers would have realized it probably before. I was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. I thought they were just going to be extremely useful in the fight against the clickers somehow, but no.
Just two friends having a casual conversation.
Until it's
that's what
less
you,
than
that's
casual,
what you imagined,
I guess.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oh, I thought they were just going to grow close and be buds and attack clickers, and I didn't know what to expect. Here's an even funnier take, by the way. There's a New York Times opinion piece from Michelle Goldberg who argues that the show is very conservative, this episode especially, that zombie stories are the most conservative of capital C conservative
that
of all pop culture.
Inherently conservative.
Yeah. Like, you know, governments collapse, you got to be a good, you got to have Second Amendment to have a gun, there's the brutality of man and the state of nature. It's just...
I guess there is kind of like...
I guess.
It's preppers, right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Bill was.
I was going to say, like, the Fireflies are kind of like, from a certain point of view, like people who are like, don't give me a COVID vaccine. That's government interference. In this, so I kind of see that. I mean,
I can see it, but it was just a weird take.
Yeah, in this one, it's like that they do a good job of establishing that as Nick Offerman said this week, the government are all Nazis.
That she quotes that. Yeah, she calls it a right wing fantasy if they weren't gay.
Interesting.
I thought it was, but it was weird to go in that direction. My bottom line is that it did feel a little forced this episode, but it had to be forced because it's a video game adaptation, and I liked it because I was entertained. I don't think it was great. Now I will say a few things I did think were great. I thought that final shot was really good, and that
the one through the window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really a smart move not to go back and show their dead bodies or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because usually that's what you get. It was played more for sentimentality and sadness, which was kind of cool. What I think that they deserved as good representation on TV.
I really enjoyed Nick Offerman playing against a certain kind of imagined type that he has.
Yeah.
First off, playing into it by being the survivalist in his bunker. Mm-hmm. And then playing against it by being Frank's partner.
Did either of you, I feel like you did, read any of the Game of Thrones books?
Mm-hmm.
I read the first one.
I read all of them.
Okay, I thought you might have. So this reminded me of, especially in like the last book that he published, the white one with the dragons on it, I don't remember what it's called, where he would, and I would get so frustrated because he would introduce a character, tell a whole story, and then that character would die and have contributed nothing to the actual plot. Mm-hmm. That's what this episode was to me. It was fine.
Yes.
It was a lovely story. But what was the point? If they had done this backup and then we had seen more of, like, they come back and help Joel and Elliot, so even for just one more episode, that would have been fine. It just reeked of George R. R. Martin, and I hated it.
I didn't actually
hate it, but that's just kind of what I was thinking of.
I feel like it's more like if the show is a canvas, this is kind of like the background. This is the color palette. This is helping flesh out the world that they're in and maybe the world that we're in.
But it doesn't seem like it is, though, because it seems like it's such like a picturesque standalone mm-hmm. place mm-hmm. and time and thing for just these two people. It doesn't really tell you what's actually happening in the world.
Mm.
It just tells you what's happening in their world. And they don't matter because they're dead now.
Yeah.
I like that the show did take a break to tell this story.
Well, it needed it. Now, could they have done something different that would have been more lasting and important and fit with what Natalie's arguing about? Maybe so. Now I'm starting to see that seems like an alternative.
I mean, if they're going to make it up anyways, why not give them one extra episode? It's not in the game. It doesn't matter.
They're very scared right now, as far as the writing goes, in three episodes to relinquish the reins of the game. That's my take on it. You know, a lot of the chatter online that's being ignored, or at least to my eyes, is that the show does deserve a little bit of applause for having a storyline with euthanasia, in my opinion. I think that's a conversation worth having.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Final thoughts on episode 3 of The Last of Us?
I liked it. I thought it was good. Maybe not great, but really mm-hmm. good. Although I'm not sure it was worth crying 20 minutes over.
Yeah, no tears. It was worth no tears.
How many tears on the tear scale? Zero.
Zero. Was only worth the bump in Spotify plays for Linda Ronstadt, and that was it.
She got a big mom.
She did.
We will take a break. On the other side of our break, we're going to talk about the film Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. Coming this Thursday, February 9th, it's back. Season 3 of This Song Sucks. Find it in any podcast app or listen directly from the site. You can also find Alabama Slam on Fridays, Taking On Sports most Mondays, our show, Taking It Down, on Tuesdays, and once a month, Check Your Shelf, the book podcast. Also, keep your eye out for sporadic episodes of We Are a Star War, which is about, you guessed it, Star Wars. Okay, we've gotten around to the previously released MCU film Wakanda Forever. Probably important to note that it's Angela Bassett is nominated for an Oscar for her performance in this as T'Challa's grieving mother. We're going to get into spoilers really instantly in case you haven't seen it. It's been in theaters and now on Disney Plus, which is where I think we all watched it. Well, two of us watched it. And Donovan's going to chime in he wishes.
I'm just going to say, really? Incredible.
Just agree with me. Everything I said. Great, good point, Natalie.
Yeah.
So when I found out the title of the movie was Wakanda Forever, I had no idea it was referencing the runtime.
did you really have a problem with the length of it?
Yeah, I did.
Man, we're going to disagree today.
It's as long as Bardo.
It is as long as Bardo. That's right. I do want to ask, specifically Natalie, was it like just life circumstances where you were personally that you didn't get around to seeing it in the theater, or was it lack of interest?
It was just, I have no interest in going to a theater. Not that I didn't want to see the movie, but we have one theater in this town. It's terrible. And the people there are just fine, but I don't want to be around them.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really getting picky on what I'll go see in the theater these days. It's been so long. Wakanda Forever, this is my huge salvo. This is my thesis for the rest of the show. Wakanda Forever desperately missed Chadwick Boseman. Not the Black Panther of the previous movie, but someone like Boseman who could carry this movie. It was just lost without a Chadwick Boseman-esque person, a star.
But wasn't that the kind of the point of the whole movie?
It was, yeah. And it was searching for that all throughout. But to me, it needed someone to step up and say, I'll put this movie on my back. I think that's what Marvel movies tend to do, and this one didn't.
I think this was the least Marvel movie that they've done in a way that works really well for me.
Wow. I'll tell you how much I thought that it needed someone like that. When Michael B. Jordan made his cameo, I was like, well, finally. But here we are in minute 158. It was just too little too late. I was really hoping that he was about to somehow find a way to be the Black Panther, come back to life or something, because...
Typical male opinions right there.
Well, you know... right. I tried my best to go into this movie without her anti-COVID vaccine and adjacent homophobia kind of stuff out there. I tried to go into this movie without thinking about that, and I mostly watched it without thinking about her weird ways, but I don't know. I don't know that she's a star.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. Maybe she's not the kind of person that can carry this kind of movie. But again, I don't think this particular movie needed that. I think we felt just as lost, or I felt just as lost as some of the characters, because they were missing their leader. And it made, to me, the movie much more, I mean, you want to pull up that 0 to 20 tier scale real high up there. You know, I felt some feelings pretty much the whole time. But I think that this movie gave, I mean, everybody loved Chadwick Boseman. I mean, whether you're into the Black Panther or not, I mean, everybody just loved him and respected him. And I think that this movie gave the audience the opportunity to be a part of a grieving process instead of it just like, we're going to watch a 10-minute funeral scene and then move on. Oh. It was an almost 3-hour collective grieving, growing. And even at the end when, you know, we have a new Black Panther and then the, you know, the after credit scene or whatever, it still was sad, but I thought it was great. I loved this movie.
Wow. See, you talk about it. It was a movie that was trying not to, hey, here's a 10-minute grieving scene. To me, that's what it felt like. It felt like it had that 10-minute. Yes, it did. It felt like a 10-minute grieving scene. And then, oh, by the way, here's Namor. And did you know his backstory? And here's Ironheart. And did you know what she's been up to? I'm just like, man, pump the brakes and just give me the grieving. If it would have been 2 hours and 43 minutes of some serious, I don't know, not serious. Okay, yeah, fuck it. Serious grieving mixed in with maybe a little action. I would have been like, oh, this is brave. This is kind of cool. We're really looking at Black Panther and the actor Chadwick Boseman as revelatory and important, but it felt passing to me until that last bit you're talking about with the young boy. And I thought, oh, okay, they're trying to bring it back around. And that was nice. That was kind of nice.
He was just super cute too. Yeah, he was very charismatic, that kid. I thought that they, whether it was talking about T'Challa or not, you know, there was still, you know, Namor's story is full of grief. Mm-hmm. You know, we continued with Ramunda's death, more grief. I mean, this was just a sad movie.
Okay.
I've read some reviews and critiques. I'm curious about this, that claim that the movie ends up being more interested in setting up Marvel Phase 5 stuff because it had to, and it kind of lost focus on its main story. Did either of y'all feel that way?
I think there were a couple of parts that were definitely in there, and it felt very jarring mm-hmm. during those scenes because it felt very much like this was, they had to put this in mm-hmm. and we, you know, they had to check this box for Marvel, but yeah. then it would get back into what we actually cared about, or what I actually care about. Blaine didn't seem to care about any of it. So
I didn't much. This is something I thought about, by the way, which goes with that question. This felt a lot more like Kevin Feige and company coming in with pages of things that needed to go into the script rather than three or four bullet points.
Like what?
Well, I think that Namor's backstory could have used a completely movie unto itself. And Ironheart did not necessarily need... That could have... excuse me. That could have been someone else. It could have been the Martin Freeman character.
See, to me, the Martin Freeman bit was part
useless.
That didn't need,
that yeah, was no, useless. That was useless too. That somehow needed to be converged so that Namor's got a reason to attack humanity. But why not just have him attack humanity and then we find out in another movie? I don't know. That might be a little too much. No motivation kind of problem there if that's what happened. But I think a really brave choice, and it probably would have concluded the grieving, not concluded, continued the grieving, was maybe have Angela Bassett as the Black Panther. I think that would have been wild. Or
yeah.
Winston Duke is such a good actor. I just don't know why he's relegated to a helping hand in some of this.
Well, it is true to the comic though that Shuri becomes a Black Panther at some point. So
oh, is it really?
I'm pretty sure she has a phase in the comics.
Okay. She doesn't seem like she's going to wear that title long.
No, I doubt it.
They might be looking for a reason to get rid of her anyway. I did feel like it didn't focus on one story. I felt like it was trying to focus on three or four. Like Donovan kind of mentioned that critics mm-hmm. probably were saying. Donovan, I'll tell you what this movie even yeah. had. It even had a moment where a character said to another character, "We're a lot alike, you and I."
Ripped from the pages of Batman v Superman.
I mean, it was kind of like that. I'm misappropriated, probably, or misquoted, I should say. Ironheart character says in the climactic battle scene for the queen, and like she knew the queen all of one day. I don't know. It's just stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but the queen did die for her, so, you know.
Well,
you're
yeah,
allowed
they fought,
to
they
be
did.
A little bit more.
They fought side by side there for a second, for a scene. I guess it lasted a day. Namor's motivation was clear, and I did appreciate it. I thought some of that should have been tucked into another movie, maybe even one for him and him alone. What did you think about the actor, though? He's going to have to carry that character going on out. Is he the guy?
I don't see why not.
Man.
I mean, it's not like we have the highest of acting standards for these characters anyways. We've lucked into some really great ones, but most of them have just been fine.
Yeah. Well, that was one
Robert
of my...
Downey Jr. win an Oscar? Am I crazy? Or did
for
you...
Iron Man? No.
For Iron Man. Not for Iron Man.
No, for Iron Man 3. No, that's my thing. I saw this guy Namor, and I thought he was okay. And I see Wright. I see... And Bassett was good. I see these other characters, and I think, man, we used to have Robert Downey Jr. We used to have Chadwick Boseman. We used to have Chris Evans. We used to... Like, where's the spending on going out and getting, like, a top-notch character or whatever?
But do you remember when the first Iron Man came out? I mean, mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. wasn't a big name. He's a big name now because of Iron Man.
He's not a big name, but he was a great actor. Like, casting did their job, I guess, is where you would put the credit. You know what I mean?
I mean, I do, but I also think when you're given a character that is so closely tied to your personality anyways.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
You know, how hard is it?
It's true. He's fun, at least. So yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. Natalie feeling one way, I felt the other. I can see her point of view for sure.
Can you? I feel like you're just...
No, I can.
I thought it was a beautiful movie. Donovan, you should go watch it at night.
Me, to quote the Coens, and me, I have no opinion.
That's a good ending point for us. That's the end of our show. Full truth, I'm just about to pack up and go to the doctor, so not because of anything Natalie said, but because I've got a fever right now. So that's the end of our show. We'll continue the conversation online. Guess what, people? Facebook, we now have a group. If you have seen things or you want us to cover things, or if there's a conversation you want to have about TV and movies, you should do it. Instagram and Twitter, we're also there, Taking It Down Pod. The whole podcast network's on the Alabama Take, and you can find that on any social network, pretty much. We'll talk to y'all next week.